Hello, everyone. I am Claudio Murgan, the host of the Speech Inspired podcast, and my guest today is Monica Kapoor. Monica has been a lifelong seeker for the deeper meaning of life beyond the material forms and the world that is visible to us. She was inspired to write her first book, Taste of Heaven, after experiencing a profound awakening to divine love. Monica's second book of nonfiction, From Fear to Love, offers a shift in perception to those who are willing to open their hearts and minds to the idea that we are each worthy and capable of receiving unconditional love and forgiveness. More about Monica and her books you can find at monicakapoor.ca. Monica, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We met at World on the Street Book Fair in Toronto, and we had a quick chat, and finally, we are meeting on the podcast because I was intrigued by the books you wrote and the titles, and I wanted you to share your experience with my viewers. So once again, thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you to start asking you an odd question. Have you asked your guides about doing this interview?
Have I asked my guides?
Yes.
my inner guides.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Which is why it took me some time to be here with you today. It took a couple months. I was, you know, when I received the go ahead, I contacted you. So it was that readiness and you know, wanted to be fully here and present with you and ready for this interview. So thank you again so much for having me here.
And I'm thanking to your guides because they allow you to be on my podcast.
Me too. I'm very thankful.
We briefly discussed about your ancestry, which resides in India. Mm-hmm. And you've been exposed to Hinduism. I just assume that you've been a part of this religion for a while.
Yes. And
I'm interested to know if your family is fond of any specific ascended master.
Actually, they were not. Growing up, I was, was raised in Hinduism, but we did a lot of rituals, and I followed along, and I would always ask questions as to why we do this and why we do that. I didn't want to blindly just follow through. So I was very inquisitive. My parents would say, okay, go to the temple, ask the pundit there, he will tell you. And sometimes I would go and they wouldn't have an answer for me either. And I just kept asking questions, and it was always why? But to answer your question, no, my parents followed Hinduism, and Hinduism is very philosophical, right? There's a similar to Buddhism. So they followed the scriptures as much as they interpreted them. There wasn't a specific ascended master.
Yeah. And I think like any religion or the priest of any religion has gaps in his own knowledge because they are not capable of answering our inquisitive minds. And some of them are just common sense questions, and they will just send us away, you know, to mature and find maybe the answers for on our own before we go back to them and asking for more questions.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Have you had the chance to read the Bhagavad Gita, and what was your impression of it?
So I started reading the Bhagavad Gita when I was a teenager. And I remember my brother, he gave me the book, and it was in English, it was translated. And I was always reading in my room. I would read different books, always spiritual books. When I had the time, because obviously between homework and my teenage social life. But when I finally did receive the Bhagavad Gita, I read it, and it didn't make any, I could not understand it. It was like, what is this? It's a different language. It's in English, but I couldn't understand it. And it wasn't until after many years later, after I have had what I called my taste of heaven, which I wrote a whole book about in my first book, is when I could go back to the Bhagavad Gita and then it made sense. So it was after having my spiritual experiences. So that's what was lacking as a teenager, at least in this lifetime, right? with my memory. So that's what was lacking, was the spiritual experience, because I just could not understand it then. And then after reading it the second time, after having my own spiritual experience, my own personal experience with God, whatever name you want to call God, mine was with Shiva, on the special day of worship of Shivratri, which, you know, I will talk about in more detail. And which I have, of course, written my whole book about. It was just beautiful to read it again and then just be, receive that clarity and understanding, and just, it resonates. Then it just every line, you know, it's just beautifully resonates. And then I felt like I wasn't reading it for the first time. I felt like it was inside of me. So it was like coming home, you know, and that was of course after having my own experience, which I can talk about now if you like.
Yeah, I can please. Share. I mean, but I can just tell you that I had the same reaction when I first started to read Gita.
Yeah,
I couldn't understand anything.
No.
And then later on, many years later, in fact, yeah, I had the chance to become accustomed with Paramahansa Yogananda, and I read his discussion with God Talks to Arjuna, and he very nicely explained in detail the meaning of Bhagavad Gita, and that really made sense and it changed my life. So now please let's go into your own spiritual experience that immerse you into the love of God.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, so that's exactly, you know, what happened it was really a transformation from the, you know, fear of God, like God fearing, to God loving, complete shift. Because growing up, it was always, there is that underlying, you know, fear of God. And I even heard those words from, you know, my parents one time. It's like God fearing. And then, you know, again, I sat with it as in just got used to hearing those words. But it wasn't until after I was married and after the birth of my daughter that we have three daughters. And this happened after the birth of our second daughter. And it was on the day of Shivratri. She was about 6 weeks old. And I had a toddler at the time, my eldest daughter. And they're both standing with me in the kitchen. And my husband was working from home that day. So it was a big snowstorm here in Canada. We live in Ontario. We were in Cambridge, Ontario at the time. And he comes downstairs. It was mid-morning, about 10 a.m. He comes downstairs and he just grabs a drink from the fridge, you know, turns around. And in that moment, it was as if I was looking at him for the very first time. And I saw Shiva in him. And I was just, I mean, it was the most beautiful experience in my life until that moment. And I wanted to stay in that moment for eternity. In fact, just the glimpse of just a second, you know, just not even a second, just that glimpse, it felt like it was eternity. It felt like I was in that moment forever. There was no time. There was no sense of time. It could have been like 100 years. It could have been a second. Like there was no sense of time. And I just had my children with me, as holding my daughter and my eldest daughter at my side. And I just felt like, Goddess Parvati, because if Shiva is my husband, I saw a glimpse of Shiva. I also felt like a goddess. And then now I have these children of God, and I felt there's a lot of realization in that moment. It was like, it was rejoicing. I was celebrating the whole day after that. I was, you know, going to the grocery store and just admiring all the gods and goddesses around me. Like I felt like I was in heaven. I felt like I was in heaven. That search, that yearning, for God that I had my whole life to know, to experience, to be with God, you know, God, and always thinking that God is far away, somewhere up in the sky as a little child, you know, thinking when will that moment come where I could feel that union. And this was it. It happened in my house, in my kitchen. So I felt like my home is a temple, because if God is here, this is the temple. The whole world is God's cathedral, as in the Bible, right? We read those words.
Yeah.
And many scriptures say the same thing, that God is within us. And so I didn't experience that until that moment. And it just completely transformed me. And that's where the shift came from God fearing to God loving. And then I also felt that, you know, there's no sense of punishment, or there's no sense of like sin. Like everything was just washed, like all these beliefs that I had from a young age, you know, all the people that I interacted with, learned about different religions and so forth, and within my own religion as well, just everything was just washed, and I felt completely fulfilled within me. And so many of my needs and desires in that moment were fulfilled. I felt complete. I felt like all that neediness, all those endless desires just ceased. It came to an end. And I was just full. I was just oozing with love, you know, whether it was whether it was an ant that I would watch on the sidewalk, or whether it was, you know, a dog that I would see across the street, or another human, or any form, any life form. I felt like we were all one. You know, there's no separation. And that's what we are. In fact, we are all one. And again, we read these things, right? We read them in scriptures, we read them in spiritual books, but I never felt that before. I actually felt that union with everyone and everything around me. And that's the name of my book, Taste of Heaven, An Awakening to Divine Love, because it was divine. It was a divine love. And it was like a spiritual romance. I was falling in love with my husband all over again, you know, but in a spiritual way. And it's like, he's Shiva and I'm Parvati, you know, and it was just, and I was just dancing, celebrating, so joyous. And this actually happened. So that was just one glimpse. A few weeks later, and which I talk about in detail in my book, it happened again. And this time it was a couple of hours of our sense of time. So I was like in a completely different dimension. I was like on the floor, crawling like a baby, all the burdens of the world, you know, all that weight of the world, all the stress, any worry, gone, lifted from my shoulders, you know. And I felt so free. I felt so liberated. I felt that there was no death. There was no sickness. There was no old age. Just everything was just, again, it was just pure bliss and ecstasy. And I was in that sense of time. Again, I didn't know when I was in that other dimension how long it was. I asked my husband after. I said, how long was that? You know, how long was I in that? Because he was just watching me, right? He was just observing me and confused, because he didn't know what was happening. And he said it was a couple hours. That's how I got the name of my book, was that experience, was the taste of heaven, because I really felt like there was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. The search was over. You know, I had arrived. I was home.
Yeah. Beautiful. And how, has Amit reacted to this type of experience since? Is he supportive? Does he want you to get more and more of it?
So Amit, he's very supportive. He's not into, like, he doesn't read spiritual books. And of course he read my books, but he's not into spirituality in the way and form that I am. And he is spiritual in his own way. We all are, right? So
yes.
I mean, watching sports even, right? That there's certain things that, like, it's so emotional, and the presence and just things that he gathers through and playing sports himself, and just being in that moment, being so present, which we, you know, we hear about, we read about in so many spiritual books. And feeling that bliss, right? That you feel in those moments. So he's spiritual in his own way, but he never, like, he's fully supportive of my path and my journey. You know, when I was writing my first book, I would receive, it was like a download, right? When I would write, there was no time. I would just receive this sort of download, and I would have to write in that moment and drop everything and just write, whether it was middle of the night, whether it was driving to the grocery store or with my children. So we actually did get some help in that time because the kids were young. Like I said, we had a newborn baby and a toddler. And so, you know, so in that way as well, like, it was very supportive. We had a nanny to help us with the kids, and I was definitely going through this transformation, so I really needed the support, and so I feel very blessed that I had, you know, I have a wonderful husband who supports me. Beautiful. In the way that he does. Yeah,
and I know it's very hard when one of us gets into that ecstatic state and yeah. feels the bliss. It's very hard to sustain the moment, to be in that state because of the daily life. You come back to your kids, you come back to the challenges of yeah. life.
Yeah.
How hard was for you to sustain that ecstasy?
So this state of ecstasy, this blissful state, it lasted for months, for many months. And I would just go, you know, I would go in and out. I talk about the one time where in my book where it was a couple of hours. That was very intense. It wasn't as intense for the whole time, for the number of months, but, you know, I was just in and out, and I was, to be honest, yeah, coming back was hard. When I came back from the other dimension, I was feeling really, you know, it was like going, you know, I felt
detached,
down. I felt
very
sad.
Detached.
I want to go back. I want to be there now, you know. It's like, oh, okay, now I have to do this and that, you know, go about my day. But at the same time, I found a beautiful balance, you know, between, because you have to stay balanced. If we're here in this world and we have, you know, responsibilities, obviously, with the young children, and you still have to do your household chores. But I was ecstatic. Like, I was just doing everything. And it was like a state of, it was like, you know, singing while I was cooking and as I was bathing my children. And, you know, so you can enjoy even those mundane tasks with your state, your blissful state, right? Because it's all within. It's all what's happening inside of you. Right. And that's what it is. It's all about that internal dialogue that's happening, that each of us has 24 hours a day with ourselves, right? Where we have this internal dialogue, which actually that's brings me into my second book. Because it's that book is all about shifting, like becoming aware of that internal dialogue and shifting our thoughts. And that book is called From Fear to Love, A Shift in Perception. So as we change our thoughts from negative to positive, our emotions automatically shift from fear to love. And that's what I learned. And we have to be conscious, present in order to change our thoughts, right? So we have to tune into our thoughts, but then, you know, it takes a certain level of presence and consciousness to do that. So, but it does work. And I, you know, I lived in a lot of, there was a lot of, there was a few in particular traumas that I had from childhood. So many months after my spiritual, you know, the ecstatic state, the blissfulness, what happened was about maybe 8 months, 8, 9 months into it, I started to feel a lot of fear every night, you know, when it would get dark, I would be washing my face, or just when I was with myself, right? Kids were sleeping. I was with myself and with my own thoughts. And I just felt this intensity, this just such intense fear. And I told my husband about it. And I said, I don't know what this is. I don't know why I feel it. What was happening was all the repressed fears from childhood were coming to the surface to be released, right? Because things that were too big for me to process, traumas that, you know, as a five-year-old, I had, my mother had a, there was an incident, it was my birthday, and my mom was cooking for my party, and she was using a pressure cooker, and it actually exploded on her face. So she was severely burned, and she lost her eyesight as well, which miraculously did come back. She did regain her vision, but I mean, I was the only one home at that time, and I was just trauma. I was just paralyzed. I was just looking at her like it was like a horror movie, you know. It was like, but this is my mom, and this is my birthday. I mean, it was just so traumatic. But I had forgotten that even happened, because it was so big for me to process. I don't even think I cried in that moment. I just repressed it. Everything just, you know, so it was like deep inside of me. It was still there. The memory was there.
Yes.
So it did come to the surface. I was at, we were at, for my sister-in-law's, we were in Las Vegas, actually, and we were at a casino, and the smell of the smoke, it triggered that memory. And then I was just in tears. I was just crying for hours, just uncontrollably, because I didn't have the chat. I didn't cry at that young age. I was just in complete shock. And so that was all coming to, you know, I was feeling all those intense emotions, but they were ready to be released. It was ready to come to the surface to clean it up. There was like a cleansing that was happening, right? And so I, you know, read a lot and researched, and then I started writing my second book, From Fear to Love, because I wanted to help others also be freed of those, of their daily fears and anxieties, which I was experiencing firsthand, but with traumas that were happening, that happened in childhood. So I just wanted to help others, because I, you know, it's a shorter read, and I give a lot of tools and techniques and what worked for me. And as a result, I feel so much lighter and so much happier. It's a more happier, lighter feeling. It's all gone. all that weight that I was carrying around for, like, you know, 30 something years, right? At the time, like, I was five, and it was just in my early 30s, almost mid 30s at the time when this all happened. So I was carrying it with me, but I had no idea that I was carrying that weight until, you know, the heaviness obviously was there. You feel it on a subconscious level, but you know, you have to be quite tuned in and conscious to know, to you know.
Yeah, it's very good to release these traumas, just because when you release it, the environment around you becomes lighter, as you mentioned, and also you don't move that heaviness into your offspring, into your children. And if they are raised in this type of light, loving environment, their trauma will be less or non-existent. They might have trauma from previous lives, but at least we don't consciously add to their trauma. We are trying to pretty much keep them trauma-free.
Yeah.
And with us becoming spiritually awakened and releasing this heaviness, giving them this, let's say, not free pass, but lighter pass in life, for generations, we hope that less and less trauma will be passed over ancestrally.
100%. You're absolutely right, because I noticed, so before I did release these, you know, traumas from within me, when the children were younger, and I was, because there were so many limiting beliefs that were created in that moment. So in my five-year-old self, as I was looking at my mom, I was creating all these limiting beliefs. The kitchen is unsafe. Hosting is unsafe, right? Because we were having like 50 like people over to the house for my birthday party, right? So my mom was cooking. So kitchen is unsafe, cooking is unsafe, hosting is unsafe. So my, you know, and I, as a result, I did avoid the, you know, I obviously maids have to make simple meals. You have to cook for your family, right? But I've had that hesitation where as a teenager, even, right, my mom would want me to come and help her in the kitchen, and I would run from the kitchen, right? I didn't know why, and she said, oh, you don't want to help me. But I realized that it was because of that experience that happened. And then later on, after I got married, my husband loves, you know, having people over. He loves hosting. He has a lot of friends. And the first time he asked me to have someone over, and I yelled out, no. And he's confused, right? He's like, okay, like I don't want to get into an argument with you. But the reason why that happened was because I was remembering subconsciously, right? Because we were hosting. It was my birthday, and my parents loved hosting. They always we'd always have get-togethers and parties, and you know, they love that. So then I was limited because I created that belief, right, that hosting is unsafe. Yeah. But yet that only happened. There was one incident where that happened. I mean, we had many parties and get-togethers, but I kept that within me. And later, when I was writing my second book, and when I started to release my childhood traumas, and I explained to my husband, I said, "Oh, this is why I didn't want to host, and I didn't know, but now I'm ready." So
I smiled now, because I might have to check with my wife. Maybe she has a similar trauma, you know.
Maybe. I mean, you know, aside from the fact that it there is work involved, but it's a labor of love, right? When you have people over, it's lovely, you know. It's, and now I feel that when we have people over, it's a labor of love, and I love it. And you know, it changes. That shift really is that shift in perception, as I talk about in my second book. It really changes your life. And I wish that upon everyone, because we should be unlimited, right? We should be limitless, and embrace, because that's who we really are in essence. But we create these limiting beliefs, and those are created from traumas and from certain experiences that happen in our life.
Yes. Yeah, and even Dolores Cannon mentioned many years ago that we shouldn't get sick, we shouldn't get old, but it's just our limiting beliefs and what's around us which constrain us to think that we're going to get old, we can get sick, and all these things happening, the degradation of this physical body.
It's all in the mind, right? Yes. And because, you know, we see it around us, and then we have that belief, right? So the mind is so powerful.
Yeah. Right? Monica, through this spiritual experience, you also had another metamorphosis, which was the change of your name. Why?
Yes. Okay. I will talk about that. So I was nursing my daughter one afternoon, and as she was, you know, in my arms, I was nursing her, and I had tears were flooding, you know, in my eyes. I had beautiful thoughts of compassion, just loving thoughts. And then I heard the name Isha, and I just was, you know, just got chills. Like, it's just, you know, I just didn't know where that was coming from or what that meant, or like, you know, who's calling me. And I just, it was almost, so at the time I Googled it, and you know, I was reading, like, what is Isha? Okay. Goddess of all gods. Like, it's just a very powerful name, very strong, very, you know, and beautiful name too, the sound of it, Isha. And I was just, and I felt like, you know, was that my name in a past life, or is this a new beginning? So I told everyone to call me Isha. I told, you know, my parents and my friends and everyone to call me Isha. And I felt like it was a new beginning, you know, like just like a reset.
Interesting. People outside the Hindu religion think that you have thousands of gods. What I usually say is that Hinduism has thousands of manifestations of God. What would you reply?
Yes, absolutely correct. It's not thousands of gods, it's thousands of manifestations of God, and how each of us, they're actually attributes, right? So each god and goddess represent different attributes, and certain people are drawn to that god or goddess, right? So being Hindu, like, you know, there's someone could be drawn to Lord Ganesha, and someone could be drawn to Lord Krishna or goddess Saraswati. Like there's, and this is the reason, is because so we can relate to certain attributes that resonate, and we're just naturally drawn. But there only is one God, and not just within Hinduism, within all religions. There aren't different gods in different religions. I never believed that. Even when I was young, I was like, it doesn't make any sense. How can we have like a different religion? How can we have so many different gods, right? We have one earth. This is we all live here together in humanity. And so I never believed that.
And the best representation of this, let's say, confusion or chaos of religions is the movie PK. I don't know if you had the chance to watch this Indian movie.
I heard of it.
It is phenomenal. I watch it twice.
Wow.
By myself and with my family. I would recommend it to everyone.
Everyone.
It's
okay.
like E.T. coming to Earth and trying to understand God and religion. Mm-hmm. And it's so confusing for him because he converts to Hinduism, to Christianity, to Jewish religion, to any particular religion on earth, trying to find mm-hmm. God. And his conclusion is that the God of the priests and those claiming that they represent God mm-hmm. is all fake. And the God has a different manifestation. So that's why the movie doesn't take sides of any particular religion. Mm-hmm. And is a perfect, perfect representation of what's going on Earth right now from a religious perspective. So again, mm-hmm. I would recommend everyone to watch the movie.
To watch it. Well, I wrote in my first book, right, about that, about how, because scriptures even and religion, like religion is man-made, right? But who made man? Who made us? Right? God made us. So it's humanity. We're all one, and religion actually divides us. It can divide. It doesn't have to, but sadly, in many cases, it does divide us, which is why I feel more spiritual and just connected to everyone, regardless of what religion that they are.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And I think to you, everything comes as, or you view everything as Trinity. You know, you have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva in Hinduism. Mm-hmm. You have the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in Christianity, yeah. And then the yeah. three body concepts in Buddhism. Even the flower of life, in fact, starts with from a concept of three.
Yes.
So why do you see, is that because of the scripture or because of the experience you had?
It's because of the experience that I had. And everything that I see is and even like triple digits, you know, when I look at my phone, it's just, you know, you happen to pick up your phone. It's like certain signs and messages, I feel, you know, yeah. from our guides.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I started to see that more and more.
Certain Sorry. Numbers show up every single time where I pick up the phone at the right moment. Yes.
Does that happen to you too?
Yes. Yeah. You know, a while back, many years ago, I read Deepak Chopra's books, and in one of them, he mentioned a story when he was young, living in India. I think it was he was living in Delhi, and his grandfather used to take him to a sage, to a saint outside the city. And Deepak mentions how the moment he was approaching the hut, that guy was living in squalid conditions. He wasn't a rich guy. It was just a saint. Mm-hmm. He was feeling the energy. And then wow. that person, that saint, was able to read his future. And mm-hmm. there are certain things which only Deepak knew at that time. And later on in life, he went back and he wow. confirmed that the readings were quite accurate. So my question is, have you tried something similar, either here in Canada or in India?
I did have my I did have some readings. My parents took me to a few you can call them sages, saints, and they did. I was told that my because I was quite as a child, very studious and very academic. I have a few university degrees, but they always said that she's going to be very like she her life is going to change. Like she's going to have this shift. She's going to be very spiritual. So it was a bit of a shock to my parents. They're just but it's I do re I remember hearing that when I was younger.
So did they regret spending the money on the universities and all the diplomas, or they're okay with
No, not at all.
that? That's
That's important, right? Education is something no one can take away from you, and you learn a lot, and you don't know
yes.
when you'll need that in your life, right? So.
Exactly. Have you heard of Sarovar Sacred Lake in India? And have you visit any special places in India?
I have, yes. When I was young, I was my parents went to a place called Vaishno Devi, which I've written about in my book. And I always said that I would go back with my husband. It was something that I just remembered saying, and as a young girl, and so I did go back. So this is I talk about it in chapter 3 of my book, in my first book, Taste of Heaven. And when we went back, it was just such an amazing experiences I had there. And I think it was the things were starting to open up for me. This was before my glimpse of Shiva, which happened, that was after the birth of my second daughter. So right after marriage, about a year after marriage, my husband Amit and I did go back to the spiritual place. And I saw different visions of Ganesh on the mountains, like as we were trekking up, as we're walking up, and it was just heavenly. It was just so beautiful to experience that, and especially to experience that with my husband and being newlyweds as we were. And he felt it too. He doesn't know, like he felt that energy. And just even leading up to our trip, it was just so many beautiful moments that we shared and were very spiritual. And I talk about that in my third chapter of my first book in quite some detail.
Yeah, there are countries and places where you don't go to visit. You have a pilgrimage to these places, and you have a different mindset. And it is my conviction that I wasn't giving the chance to go to certain places just because I wasn't ready spiritually, and I didn't want to visit them just as a tourist, but to feel the sense of the place, the energy of the place, and maybe expect some messages, some feedback. And that's why I realized at one point that I don't have to rush to visit X or Y just because it's not the right time.
Exactly. Everything is timing, right? Everything is about timing. And we shouldn't rush anything. And I find life becomes quite effortless, right? Because everything just magically happens and it comes to us. And it's just instead of us trying to tick off these boxes and do this, that, and the other. And I find when we go with the flow of life, it is quite effortless and things just happen with us magically. It becomes very magical.
Yes, indeed. Monica, one of the teachings in the main religion, in all the religions, in fact, is not to judge anyone else. But the moment we open our mouth, it's about judging. We just cannot refrain ourselves. How do you handle this aspect of your life?
It's interesting that you brought that up because I am writing I have started a third book, and it's about non-duality and how spirituality is beyond duality. So that'll probably be the subtitle. I'm still working on the main title, and I have a few different titles in mind. And that's all about judgment, right? Because it's spirituality is beyond the good, the bad, the dark, the light, right? so it's that's what I'm currently working on and observing around me, because it is true, and also within my own mind, right? Because it happens. It's happening, and just to be aware of it and to observe it. But I truly do believe that spirituality is beyond duality, and I do now make this a conscious effort not to judge and to let people be as they are, because everyone has a reason for their choices that they make in life. And we can't understand, because we're not in their shoes. We don't know what happened to them. Like someone could have said to me, oh, Monica and her husband, they're never calling us. Like when we were newlyweds, for example, right? They could have said, oh yes, they always come to our house. They haven't called us over for a couple of years. Why are they doing that? Like, just make that, they could think that in their heads. Meanwhile, I was suffering from my trauma, right? So it's not that I don't enjoy their company, or I don't want them in my house, or that I don't want to see them, right? Yeah. It wasn't even about work, or it's a lot of work having people over. I was traumatized as a child, right? So no one can understand that. Not even my husband, because he didn't go through that trauma, and he's so close to me, right? But after explaining to him, of course, he understands it. So I just feel like we just don't know what someone is dealing with and what their battles have been and what they're going through. So before we open our mouths, or even on a thought level, have a certain judgment, we really need to take a step back and say, well, we don't know. There's so much unknown here, and so many uncertainties, and who are we to judge, right?
Yes, and the first form, or the first way of stopping the judgment, is in our head before we express it in words. And if we do that, then it's a halfway won battle, and then we have to work on the other half. So
that's right. That's right. And that goes back to that 24-hour conversation that we have within ourselves, being conscious and listening into that and tuning in, because sometimes it's so subtle, it's so quick, right? But if we become aware, and that's what my second book is all about, is how to make those changes, how to shift our perception, how to change our thoughts, really, right? Because if we catch it, we can change it, but you have to be present. You have to be conscious present. You can't, if you're not, then subconscious takes over, and we become like a, it's like you're just a replay, right? You're just learning out things and not exactly thinking about it.
Yeah. Monica, do you have any daily spiritual practice which you can offer as to the listeners, to the viewers?
I do. So this is quite recent. I took an inner engineering. Have you heard of Satguru? I'm sure you've heard of Satguru. Yeah. So I recently took, it was last year in 2022. I took inner engineering with Satguru, and I recommend this to everyone. It is life-changing. It's 21-minute practice that I do every day. And Satguru says, if you can't take 21 minutes for yourself, how are you going to create a life for your, the way you want it? If you can't take 21 minutes for yourself the way you want it, how can you create a life of your dreams and how you want it?
Yeah.
So I do that every day. It's called Shambhavi Kriya. And it's a lot of breath work. There's some yoga, some simple yoga postures in preparation for it. And so the total time would be about between 35, 40 minutes. And it is, and I do that every morning.
Yeah.
That's how I start my day.
Perfect. So, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. And we are approaching the end of the interview. Any final thoughts?
Well, I just want to thank you again for coming to my table at the Word on the Street Festival. I feel like everything happens for a reason, and here we are chatting, and I had this wonderful interview, and I truly am grateful to you, and I appreciate being on this podcast with you, and I wish you so many blessings and so much love to you and to everyone who's listening.
Thank you very much. And we are happy that you found the love of God and you stay in that ecstatic state. And we wish you to stay for as long as possible in this lifetime. And if possible, go to the next level of ecstasy through your experiences, because this is what's important in this existence. At least this is my belief.
Yes, thank you. I wish that upon everyone too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
And to my viewers, thank you for watching. Share it, like it. Download a free copy of my book when you visit my website. And until next time, love and gratitude.